From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the reports with Jackie Vakes of TotalFarmMarketing.com. Greg Johnson will be here to discuss the cash grain segment. He's with TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast today, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Hey, I'll be busy with a couple of things over the next month and a half, and you're invited to both of them. Now, tomorrow, Tyne Morgan and the folks from U.S. Farm Report will be on campus. We'll be near the McFarland Bell Tower. That's not the one up on the north end of campus or the middle of campus next to the Illini Union, but on the south end of campus in the Ag Quad north of the Stock Pavilion. If you want to join us at 10 o'clock, please do so. Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin, ag economist from the U of I, along with Matt Bennett, U of I grad, will be here to talk about the marketplace with Tyne and a whole bunch of students, and we'd be glad to have you there as well. If we happen not to be outside at that point and you come, run over to the LIAC, which is the Ag Library. That's the one that kind of looks like a round barn. You can see it from the bell tower on the south campus. It'll be to the east of it. And the other item is the Farm Assets Conference. That's coming up on the 21st day of November. Let me give you a rundown real quick of that. We're going to talk about Argentina and Brazil prospects with Joanna Colucci. She's a PhD in the University of Illinois. In fact, we met because of her with Embrapa, the research portion, or the ARS portion of what happens in Brazil. ARS, the Agricultural Research Service here in USDA, their counterpart in Brazil. We met with them yesterday, and she's going to take us through what crops might look like and prospects in Brazil. That on Monday the 21st, prior to Thanksgiving. We'll talk about the Farm Bill with Nick Paulson and Jonathan Kappas, both from the College of ACES, along with Mary Kay Thatcher, a name you might recognize. She was with the American Farm Bureau Federation as their policy expert and now works with Syngenta. We'll discuss Ukraine and Russia and the price of fertilizer with Josh Linville from StoneX, along with having crop budgets put forth by Gary Schnitke here on campus. And that'll all be before lunch. And then we'll take up the S&D table. Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen again will be with us, along with Matt Bennett, Ben Coons, Wayne Nelson, and Brian Stark. Everybody either works for or is a graduate of the University of Illinois in that case. And then we'll wrap up the day. We'll talk about field crop productions with Aaron Hager, weed scientist, Nick Sider, entomologist, Giovanni Fontes, agronomist, and Emily Heaton, agronomist, all from the U of I, and the value of farmland with Bruce Sherrick from the University of Illinois TII Center for Farmland Research and Luke Worrell of Worrell Land Services. That's the 21st day of November. I'll give you details on where you can sign up and register soon enough. Now, we've covered a lot of ground, but there is a lot of ground yet to go. Jackie Vakes is here. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thank you for being with us. Let's start with the USDA reports for October. The crop production numbers were folded into the WASD report this morning when they were released at 11 o'clock. What did they show?
Well, when we looked at corn production, came in at 13.895 billion bushels. That was a drop of 51 million bushels. And we saw beans come in at 4.313 billion bushels, and that was a drop of 65 million bushels. Average, basically, we saw the yield for corn go from 172.5 last month down to 171.9, and beans from 50.5 down to 49.8. I would have to say that was the surprise in the report. Harvested acres remained the same. Ending stocks came in on corn at 1.172. That was above the average guess, but below the 1.219 that we had in September. Beans were the big surprise. The expectation was that we were going to see bean carryout go up to about 240, and it stayed right at 200. I'll cover that a little bit later in this on how that happened. But wheat came in at 576 compared to 610, And that was just a little bit higher than the guess also. World numbers, kind of a similar expectations and reactions. We saw corn come in lower than last month. We saw beans come in slightly higher than last month. And wheat come in slightly lower than last month. And so when you really dig into it, corn carry-in, due to some adjustments on 2021-22, came in at 148 million bushels less on production. So that was a big change there. They did increase imports by 25 million, increased feed usage by 50 million, took away, ethanol, 50 million drop there, exports, 25 million, 125 million bushel drop, And therefore, that's how we ended up with the 1.172. And yet at the very same time, they raised the average farm gate price from 675 to 680. On soybeans, we saw them adjust the carry-in up 34 million. When you looked at, I'm sorry that I have this silly throat. The crush went up by 10 million. Seed went up by 1 million, which was nothing. And we got the drop in exports that we more or less expected by 40 million, which kept the carry out at 200 million. The surprising part is they took the farm gate price and dropped it from $14.35 down to $14. And when you look at wheat, the only real big change there was, of course, that we did see some drop in the carry out. And they raised the cash price, which they've been lowering, from $9 up to $9.20. And so, all of this is, a lot of it was in the market already, Todd. The market was very disappointed with corn. So originally we went down, then we came back up a little bit, and now we're down. And beans have been pretty positive ever since the report came out. And so, it was interesting. When you looked at the world numbers, they did drop the Argentinian wheat crop. The Australians stayed the same. China stayed the same, but the EU lost 2.65 million metric tons, which is pretty doggone significant. And the rest pretty much stayed the same. China corn stayed the same. Argentine corn, South Africa, Brazil stayed the same. And EU corn dropped there too. Again, another example of how bad the drought has been over there. And Brazilian beans, 51 million Argentinian beans, 51 million. Brazilian beans, they raised from 149 to 152, not a big surprise. And when you looked again at the world bean stocks, we saw beans go up slightly, corn go down slightly, wheat go up slightly. Basically, in my opinion, wheat's been wagging the corn tail. The Ukraine blows up a bridge, we go up on wheat, we go up on corn. Yesterday, Russia said they may not have wheat export quotas next year. We go down on wheat, we go down on corn. And so I would have to say, in the future, expect more of the same. It doesn't look to me like anything's changing big on that side of it. And of course, we're going to see an announcement coming into the from the Feds, as far as what they're going to raise interest rates, and all of that is riding in this particular market at the same time. A lot of positioning going on.
What have farmers in Brazil been up to besides planting at this point? Anything?
The Brazilian farmer's really been a slow seller. He's only sold 86% of his crop, which is normally 91% sold by this time of year. And so, that's concerning. As far as forward contracting goes, too, they've been very slow. Normally, they'd have about 29.6% of their contracts in place already. They only have 18.8. But, you can't blame them. There's a lot of question out there about what's going to happen price-wise, fertilizer-wise, you name it. It's a mess is what it is. As far as Argentina goes, basically, they've pretty much been planting. They're going to be starting to plant beans, but with the weather being the way it is, it may end up, they usually start at the beginning of November. It's probably going to be pushed out further if they don't get some decent rain. And there isn't a whole lot of rain on the forecast at this point in time.
And finally, let's end where we normally start our conversation with some regular things, support and resistance levels.
Well, when you look at December corn, 669 and 766, March 689 and $8, May 683 and 702, beans 1309 and 1415, January 1319 and 1422, and March 1381 and 1429. Export inspections, Wheat exports ended up down 4% compared to 4% last week. Corn remains 21% ahead of a year ago, and this, of course, includes the adjustments that were made for the Canadian numbers. Soybeans 19 ahead compared to 18 last week.
Hey, thank you very much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you, Dad. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vakes. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather in Kansas City. Thank you, Drew, for being with us. I think we have a lot of area we need to cover geographically today. Let's start in the United States. Am I told that there is potentially a rainfall event for Texas, Oklahoma, some of those driest areas?
You know, all week long, the models have been trying desperately to create an environment that would produce some significant rain in those two states. And they're still doing it. Even now, but it's a little bit questionable. The idea here is that we get this big cold surge going across the big part of the U.S., a trough of low pressure through the Midwest, forces a cool front down to the Gulf Coast states, and actually goes pretty far to the south. And we get this little disturbance that forms in the southwestern United States, and as it comes eastward, it pulls that old frontal boundary back to the north, and allows for warm, moist air to overrun the cool air. And that's a perfect scenario for making it rain. So that's exactly what the models are trying to do, make it rain in all of Texas and portions of Oklahoma. And if that were to occur, it would be a wonderful thing for the wheat crop down there, which is struggling with limited moisture. It hasn't rained much since August. And that area would just benefit greatly if they had some moisture. At the same time, there's some cotton down there that's in the open bowl stage of development, and persistent rain wouldn't be good. But I mentioned that this, I'm a little leery about this event, and the reason for that is I don't think that the little disturbance in the southwestern U.S. is going to be as meaningful as being implied. So don't be surprised if we take the moisture away from Oklahoma and reduce it in Texas. And that's kind of where I think we're going to end up.
It's been a little dreary, some rainfall passing through, I suppose, with this cold front. Here in the Midwest, will conditions clear out and will they stay that way for harvest?
Well, I think we will clear out at times. As I mentioned before, there's going to be a broad-based trough of low pressure over the Midwest in general. For a big part of the coming week. And so we'll send little disturbances through that trough. And so we will have clouds come and go. We'll have a little bit of shower activity once in a while, but the volume of rain is minimal. And there will be a good opportunity for field work to continue to advance around what little drizzle and light rain showers we might see. So I think it's a good scenario. There is a strong surface high pressure center that will settle into the upper parts of the Midwest as we get to the end of the weekend and early next week. That'll really clear out the air quite a bit, give us some sunny, dry, low humidity air with no chance for any precipitation. And it looks like that system will help to go down and block the Gulf of Mexico for a little while. So that surface high pressure system will most likely prevent any moisture from occurring across the Midwest through most of the period from late this coming weekend through the majority of the week next week.
Let's go to South America now. We'll work our way from Tocantins, the state in the northeastern side of Brazil, through the center west in Mato Grosso and down then southward towards Argentina. What are conditions like for sowing?
Yeah, the best sowing conditions right now are in portions of central and western Mato Grosso and from there southward down into Paraná, São Paulo, some immediate neighboring areas in both Minas Gerais and certainly Mato Grosso do Sul. Now, there's actually a few farmers complaining because it's been raining a little bit too often, and so it kind of interfered with some farming activity. But the big picture bottom line here is that it's really a pretty darn good scenario, certainly a far cry from what we could be seeing with the La Nina environment that we're in. Now, it is still quite dry, though, in eastern Mato Grosso, Goiás, Tocantins, and neighboring areas of Minas Gerais and Bahia. Now, some of the northeast part of Brazil should still be dry at this time of the year, but not Goiás and not eastern Mato Grosso. Those areas need some moisture, And planting is expected to be a little slow because we're not expecting much moisture for at least the next 10 days.
Then if you move into Argentina, what do you find?
Argentina is in the midst of a full-blown La Nina drought. And what's happened in the last few weeks is we had beneficial moisture for quite a while in Buenos Aires and Entre Rios and immediate neighboring areas in Santa Fe. And the crops, winter crops, were doing really well in that area. But over these past few weeks, it has become quite dry. In fact, if you step back and you look at the percent of normal precipitation map for the last 30 days, there's a very definite, significant anomaly of below normal precipitation occurring in eastern Argentina, Uruguay, and southern parts of Brazil, which is classic La Nina. This pattern usually sets up in late October and November, so it's getting a little bit of an early start. And what's happening in Argentina is we're drying the soil out pretty good in those southeastern areas. So we've depleted usable moisture. Winter wheat is being stressed. We're still trying to plant that early corn and sunseed crop, and the majority of the country is lacking moisture, so we're not seeing very good emergence and establishment right now. The next 10 days look to be dry, and so the earliest opportunity for any kind of change would hold off until we get out beyond probably the 20th or so of this month.
And finally, if you can check in on maybe Australia very quickly, the wheat crop there, and drought in the southeastern part of China.
Yeah, in Australia, we are still in a wet weather pattern. We've been like that since, the middle of this year. And frequent waves of rain have been coming and going. That has done a little bit of a disservice to the quality of the wheat there. There's some wet weather disease going on. Not only wheat, but also barley and canola are also being involved. And it looks like this wet pattern will continue as we go on into the end of this month and probably through their harvest season. And it will expand from New South Wales and Victoria into Queensland. So keep an eye on all of that area. There's a potential there's going to be a quality decline of significance there. They have a big wheat crop right now, so it could be a big event. For China, the biggest thing right now is it hasn't rained significantly in that Yangtze River Basin area and points southward to the coast in weeks, and they are becoming really, really dry. I've been watching the weather in China for 43 years, and this may be one of the longest periods of dry weather in that particular region. And the Yangtze River Basin has a huge winter rapeseed crop that it normally produces. And they have to have some significant rain in the next few weeks to get that crop in the ground. So keep a close eye on that as well.
Rapeseed, of course, is canola, a vegetable oil, and will be important to the vegetable oil complex, including soybeans across the planet. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated. He's in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Greg Johnson now joins us from TGM, Total Grain Marketing, here in Champaign County. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us. Can we take up to begin with the transportation industry? There is a problem both within the rail industry and within the barge industry. Rail with labor availability and barges with the ability to move down the Mississippi River because of low water levels. I'm wondering if this creates a big problem for harvest and farmers.
I agree. This could be a potentially huge issue. I'm hoping that the unions are just using this as leverage in order to get a few more concessions from the companies. They've coincidentally held off. The strike would not take effect until after the election. I think they're using that to their advantage. They're trying to get this resolved before the election, or at least get pressure put on both sides until they get a resolution, because that's probably their highest point of leverage is right now, between now and the election. But if for some reason we don't get a resolution and they do go on strike, oh my goodness, we're already short rail, short truck traffic. It's hard to find truck drivers, and we just physically can't move that much grain by truck. I mean, it's just a physical impossibility. So it would really cause, I think, all kinds of havoc if we went on to had a rail strike for you know, anything more than just a show of a day or two, you know, some kind of a nominal show of support. But any lengthy strike would really cause havoc to the U.S. economy, I'm afraid.
So bases wouldn't break until when, if they were thinking about a strike? I suppose the closer it gets, the more likely it breaks.
Yes, because if you, the way I look at it, and I've heard you know, arguments for a stronger basis and a weaker basis if they do in fact go on strike. But I guess the way I look at it is, if I'm a processor, why would I want to buy corn if I can't ship the ethanol, if I can't ship the DDGs, if I can't ship the byproducts? And most of that goes by rail. You can't truck out, you know, that much ethanol. You can't truck out that many DDGs. You can ship, you know, some, but the majority of that is already done by rail. So if I can't ship it out, I'm going to get choked up on my end. And so as a buyer, I'm not going to buy it if I know I can't get rid of it. So that's the way I look at it, is that it will weaken the basis if we go on strike. But I've heard other arguments that say, oh no, for the ones that can't afford to run, at least for a little while, they'll have to pay whatever it takes. And so, and if they can't get it by rail, they'll get it by truck. And so the truck basis would go up, maybe in the extreme short run, but at any length of time, I would think it would have a negative effect on basis.
I suppose let's come back to things at hand here. Farmers probably out of the field because of the rainfall. They may have been giving you a call. What are you hearing from them?
Number one, they're thankful for the rain. They'd been going at it for 2 to 3 weeks nonstop, and they really didn't want to take a day off, but obviously they're not going to take a day off unless they're forced to. And so the weather yesterday and today is forcing them to take a day off. I don't think they're going to be out for very long. I think they could be back in as early as tomorrow, you know, or Friday at the latest. And that's very, very good news, I think, for the farmers. We had heard about our first couple of combine fires, field fires, because of the dry weather. The dusty conditions was not good. So I think really this little bit of rain, it would been better if we could have got even a little bit more rain, quite frankly. I don't think it would have kept us out of the field, and for all the wheat that got planted here in the last couple of weeks, a little bit more rain would have helped the germination process. So farmers are happy with the rain. They're not upset at all. This doesn't look like it's going to be a long-standing trend into a wetter pattern, so they'll be right back at it. We've made very good progress on soybeans here in East Central Illinois. We think we're about 60% done on soybeans. Just getting started on corn, 10, maybe 15% at the most on corn, but bean yields and corn yields, at least in this area, are better than expected. The corn dramatically so. The beans, a little bit more variable on the beans. Some people are disappointed with their bean yields. Others are okay with them. A lot of mid-60s to lower 70s, which, considering how dry it was in June and July, I guess farmers are okay with that. And the corn, even guys that checked their fields in August with thinking 190 to 200, we're hearing a lot of 210 to 225 bushel corn. And that's being attributed to the bigger kernels, I guess, and the better test weight. So good news in the corn yield department, and just kind of so-so in the beans. It's not a disappointment, but it's certainly not as big a surprise as what the corn yields have been.
Thanks much, Greg.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with TGM Total Grain Marketing here in Champaign County, and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.